Welcome to In Conversation With from the Devon and Plymouth Chamber of Commerce. Supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Presented by Stuart Elford. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hello there, I'm Stuart Elford, Chief Executive of Devon and Plymouth Chamber of Commerce, with another edition of our In Conversation With podcast. And I've never had to introduce someone with such an unusual bio. So how do I sum it up but say, hello, Susie Bennett, funny woman. Does that work? It's not too rude?
No, of course not. I actually won the Funny Women Awards, so I guess that is a good title.
So it's actually true?
I didn't get a crown, but yeah, I did. Yeah. I won the Funny Women Awards way back.
So tell us about yourself then, about your bio, because, I mean, there was so much on it. I didn't know where to start.
Did I accidentally send you my CV instead with all my waitressing jobs and all that?
No. Well, we've all done that. Well, I haven't been a waitress, but yes, we've all done that sort of job, haven't we?
Well, I was actually a steward because it was in the Navy base, so it was a posh name, but literally dropping peas on officers' laps is what I did.
Ah, you peed on officers. That's a different thing altogether.
Well, I'm a Plymouth maid.
All right, yep.
So, yeah, I'm Susie Bennett. I'm a proud Janner. Plymouth girl. I said girl, I'm 47 now. I need to grow up a bit. But
no, don't do that.
Well, I was in town in Plymouth recently and there was an 80-year-old man-ish. He was about 80 and he met up with another man and he went, all right, bye. And I thought, I love that.
Yeah, maids and babes.
I hope me and my friends are still calling each other maid and girls when we're that age, if we make it.
Well, I call people the guys, even when it's women as well. And some people say, well, I'm not a guy. And they get really offended.
That's become a collective term now, guys. Yeah. I think you can get away with that.
Yeah. Well, I got away with it. Well, so far anyway. You won the Funny Woman Award. What is that and how did it come about?
Years ago, I mean, it was 2006, so I've chopped off the date on my bio now because it's so long ago. I'm like the Steve Brookstein of comedy. And if you say, who's Steve Brookstein, that's exactly what I'm talking about. He won X Factor way back when. So, yeah, I won the Funny Women Awards. It was a stand-up competition for women and females in general. I was living up in London at the time and I wanted to get into comedy, but I didn't really know how to go about it. And because it was 2006, there wasn't really social media like there is now. So I didn't really know how to meet people, where to go, that kind of thing. And I had a day job at the time. And it was actually in a magazine. I saw the Funny Women Awards and it was sponsored by Sheila's Wheels, the free Sheila's pink Wheels, sparkly ladies. And it said, you could win a holiday. And I thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And I'd previously had a brush with stand-up. I'd done one other competition a year before with Jimmy Carr. A friend of mine had sort of bullied me into going along with him because he wanted to do this Jimmy Carr's Comedy Idol. And I went along and I accidentally got through to the final and he didn't, which was Orcs.
Yes.
So my first ever stand-up gig was on stage with Jimmy Carr at the Comedy Store in London.
Well, that's not a bad first ever, is it?
Absolutely ridiculous. And I had 5 minutes of material and it went well. I didn't win it. A guy called Colin Owens won it, but it went well. I got good feedback. And then Jimmy kept in touch with everyone. He was really supportive. And he got me on his show at the Plymouth Pavilions later on, which was amazing. Like 2,500 people with my 5 minutes of material.
Yeah.
And then a bit later on, I saw the Funny Women Awards. I thought, oh, I'll go for that. And at the time, living in London, my accent was a bit of a novelty. And I thought, oh, well, you know, people find my accent quite funny. And I phoned up. She said all the heats in London were full. Could I go to Bristol? And I was like, oh, no, there's going to be lots of me in Bristol. But I got through the heat. And then I got through to the semi-final, which was on a boat in London where they do comedy gigs. And I thought, well, that's enough. I'm sure, I'll have a nice time. The final was again at the Comedy Store. And there were people in my final who are now household names. I think I just didn't expect to win and I just enjoyed it and was myself. And then when they read my name out at the end, I didn't go up because I thought, that's a mistake.
That's a mistake.
But I won it. Wow. So I won this amazing holiday and a bit of money and lots of Sheila's Wheels merch.
Yeah.
And I didn't really do anything with it after that because I'd literally written at that point 8 minutes of material for the competition.
And that was the lot, yeah.
And I remember a couple of people ringing me up saying, can you come and do a 15-minute spot or a 20-minute spot? And not knowing what I do now, I said, oh, no, I haven't got that much material. But knowing what I do now, I could probably have winged it. Yeah. But I didn't really take it and run with it because I wasn't really sure about the industry. But I'd won it and I did stuff when people asked me to and it was brilliant. Did lots of gigs, but I was working full time at the same time. So I was doing gigs in the evenings. And it wasn't until 2012 that I actually gave up my job and went full time.
Right.
And it actually wasn't until 2016 until I moved back to Plymouth that it all really took off in a better way. There's a lovely Southwest comedy scene going on now.
Right.
Loads of gigs, loads of brilliant people. So I found my little universe down here.
Yeah, your little funny universe. So I very briefly, I say met, I stood in line while people were getting autographs from Jimmy Carr. And he does seem sort of supportive kind of guy. I can't tell the joke on a podcast, but he told a joke that he said all his jokes are close to the line. This one is over the line. Mm. And it was one of those where it made people laugh and then go, oh, I shouldn't have laughed at that because it was so on the edge. But he seems to know just about how far to push it without going too far.
Yeah, maybe. I think if you're going to see Jimmy Carr, you know what you're going to get. And there are people who've seen him on the TV and don't realise just how outrageous his live shows are. But also Gary Delaney, I went to see him recently in Plymouth and he had a clipboard and he said, I'm going to keep that clipboard there. I'm going to see what kind of audience you are. And if you're the kind of audience that are in, and that was his most outrageous, I'm going to get cancelled jokes. And then in the end, he decided Plymouth were the audience that could handle it. We could handle it. And he read out his most outrageous jokes.
He absolutely destroyed a heckler. I mean, I've never seen a heckler. I mean, literally security had to drag this heckler off because he completely destroyed him. And the guy deserved it. I mean, you could see it coming, you know. But he told the audience that his best, or I don't know, best or worst heckle he ever had. He said he was a young comedian at Edinburgh Fringe. He was dying on his feet, as he put it. And he's halfway through a joke and somebody in the audience suddenly shouted out, my mum died of cancer. And he said, I'm really sorry, but this joke isn't about cancer and it's certainly not about your mum. And the guy said, yeah, I know, but it was funnier than this.
Oh.
He said, what do you do? He said, get off. Just get off. He said, when it's that bad, you've just lost it. You've lost the audience. Ouch. So just get off.
I don't know how true this is. There's been lots of stories told about it. Kirk Douglas's son, not sure which one, was doing a comedy show at the Comedy Store and he went on stage and said, I'm Kirk Douglas's son. And someone in the audience stood up and said, I'm Kirk Douglas's son. And then other people started
I'm
doing
Spartacus.
It. Because
exactly. Yes.
I don't know how true that is, but
I can believe
I want
it.
That to be really true.
It probably is true. I went to a Comedy Store in Los Angeles and what I noticed there is the audiences were really supportive. So if someone fluffed a joke or weren't that funny, people were kind of, yeah, go on, yeah, we'll laugh. Whereas British people are like, right, make me laugh then. You think you're funny, do you? And there's that sort of slight hostility almost, isn't there?
I completely agree with you because there are nights where the audience is sort of sat, you can see by the body language, sat folded arms, you know, sort of. There are comedy savvy audiences who go to lots in Plymouth, there's especially a couple of nights, which is new material, new acts. And the audiences are really supportive because they know that it's people trying out stuff and people who are new and they're brilliant nights and they go really well. But sometimes if I'm hosting a show and there's a new act coming on, because you get a little section in the middle with newer acts.
Yeah.
And I never know whether to announce before they go on that they're a newer act because I feel like, am I doing them a disservice by putting the audience on the back foot thinking, well, they might not be very good. Or shall I just say it after? But you never know whether to have the balance right of warning
exactly
the audience because you don't want to be like warning them, but you want the audience to support them knowing they're new. But then if you don't say it, sometimes the audience will be like, oh, they're not very good. So you ask the act sometimes, do you want me to say you're new and up
exactly
and coming?
I know exactly what you mean.
So up and coming is the correct word, I think, to say. It's a very polite way to say up and coming newer acts.
No, I completely get what you're saying because I always find like support bands, you think, oh, are they going to be any good? I was lucky enough to see REM at Cardiff Arms Park 1995 and the support was the Cranberries.
Oh.
And they were just as they were beginning to rise, you know, really come to their peak, I suppose, of what they were doing. And I heard Dolores O'Riordan interviewed afterwards and she said, oh, it's just terrifying. Shit, it was daylight. We've never played in the daylight. It was a stadium. We've never played a stadium. We knew nobody really wanted to hear us, but actually they were brilliant. I mean, absolutely blew us away. And I can remember thinking, God, these guys are good. And I think because there was no expectation, but you're right, with a comedian who comes on who's new, you think, oh, is this going to be any good? It reminds me of the story about a guy who was, I think it was at architecture college, but he was certainly at college anyway. And one of his fellow students said, I think I'm going to give up and give my band a go. And he, are you really sure you want to do that? And it was one of the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
So I think he did all right. It was Mick Jagger, actually, yeah.
Well, so, Neil Tennant used to edit Smash Hits and he gave up to concentrate on Pet Shop Boys.
I think if you listen to other people, you'd never do anything, would you?
Yeah.
So what's Jimmy Carr the biggest gig you've done then? For 2,500 people?
Well, not audience-wise. I mean, if you're talking about me being on stage and the amount of people, the Moonwalk London is actually the biggest audience. There's about 16,000 people at the first one I did. That's a charity walk. I'm hosting it again this year.
Okay.
But it's basically a charity walk for breast cancer and they do it every year. It's massive. It's become massive.
Yeah.
And they famously had the big pink palace in Hyde Park, big pink tent with about 10 turrets all going through Hyde Park, and everyone gathers and you have entertainment, you have guests on, and Jennifer Saunders used to come every year. Victoria Wood famously did it and did a documentary about it. And I was lucky enough to host that a few times, and with Paul O'Grady as well. He came on, and there's a picture of us with our fabulous bras on, because you have to wear a novelty bra. And he completely outdid me because he had flashy lights and a big Madonna sort of cones. So I'm hosting that again this year.
Is that a tough gig? On the one hand, everyone's there to have a good time. But on the other hand, they're not there for comedy, are they?
Yeah, there was one year, because they do a theme every year. One year, the theme was space and people were dressed up as astronauts and all these other things. Right. And I decided to make my bra into space-themed confectionery. So I had Mars bar wrappers, Star bars, Orbit chews, Milky Ways. Very you can see where clever. I was going with that. Yes. And I had them all over my bra. And one minute I was getting the audience to do the Star Trek and dance, which I credit my butler
days. What, Star Trek and Across the Universe?
Yeah.
Only going Klingons forwards because we can't find reverse. Yes, I remember.
Klingons on the starboard bow. Yeah.
Starboard bow,
I got thousands of people doing that dance. And then 5 minutes later, I'm talking to someone who is either recovering from breast cancer or has lost someone to cancer. And we get special guests on, and then you've got a band, and then suddenly you're having a 2 minute silence. So it's having the balance between laughing and joking and getting people G'd up, and then having the somber moments, remembering why we're there.
The conversation continues shortly. But first, Stuart Elford and the Chamber of Secrets.
My guest today, who's going to pull a random question submitted by our listeners out of the box, is Angus Forbes. Hello, Angus.
Hi, Stuart.
So I've explained to Angus he's going to pull out a question, so go for it.
Thank you very much. Here we go. Have you got a tattoo? If not, what tattoo would you have?
Oh, that's good.
The answer is no, I don't have a tattoo. I think the one I've enjoyed the most over the years, and I'm not an expert on this, and there's people who are brilliant in this space, but is a very simple one between the shoulder blades, which said made in England, like it was a name tag on the back of your school shirt. Yes. And I thought, if I'd made in Australia, just there, I think that would be quite cool.
I get it. Okay. Well, I don't think I can beat that. Normally, he comes into the studio with me, but Charlie, the Chamber Wellbeing Officer, who you've not met yet.
Oh, yes.
My four-legged friend.
Yeah.
I haven't got a tattoo, but if I did, I thought his paw print somewhere.
That would be nice.
I'd like his paw print, because he is my one true love. Although he did one day in this studio, we were on a very complex Zoom call with someone on the other side of the world who'd stayed up till about 1 or 2 in the morning to be able to do our call, because he was with the Sail GP team and he was in America somewhere. And about 5 minutes into the interview, Charlie sat on a kill switch that knocked the whole studio out. So bless him. So we love him, and it's a good job the team here at Fresh Air love him, because that took a bit of resetting up. But anyway, there we go.
I'd love to meet him next time.
Thanks for being a great sport.
Thanks,
Angus Forbes.
Follow the Devon and Plymouth Chamber of Commerce on X at @chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
Yeah, well, that just reminds me, funny enough, sometimes humour and sadness can go very, very well together. It's the sort of black humour that used to keep us sane when I was a police officer. And I remember very young in my career, I probably only got 6 months service in, we were looking for a body in a big field and woods and everything, and it was a hot day and we're chopping away at all the undergrowth and everything, and hours go by without anyone saying anything. It's a miserable task. And then suddenly my sergeant pipes up, "It's worse than that, he's dead, Jim." Dead, Jim. And it broke the thing. And I know it's not appropriate.
Well, it's gallows humour.
Yeah.
My mum was a nurse and she knows all about that. And do you ever listen to Alfie Moore's podcast?
No, who's Alfie Moore?
He's a serving policeman still. He's on a very long sabbatical because he's got a Radio 4 show called It's a Fair Cop. And it's been running for lots and lots of seasons. And he's got some brilliant stories about his time in the force. And he's got one about they found a head, basically.
Yes.
They found a head, but they weren't allowed to pronounce them dead. So they had to radio through and they said, "Are they deceased?" And he went, "Well, don't bother sending an ambulance, just send a hat box," is what he said. Yes. Something along those lines. But he's got many stories like that. With the sadness thing as well, I do a lot of gigs for charities, and a lot of the time you do have to watch videos of what the charity's for, and there's sad videos and there's people telling their stories, and you know, you're there to sort of keep things going and sort of chat to people. But it doesn't mean you can treat it lightly. I would never treat anything lightly. Plymouth charity Jeremiah's Journey have asked me to be an ambassador for them, and they're a charity that helps bereaved children and families.
Yeah, great charity.
Yeah, they've asked me to be an ambassador for them, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm doing some comedy nights with them. And
great.
I've had to write a little piece about what the charity means to me. And I lost a parent at a young age. And that's one of the reasons that I got chatting to the lady who booked me for it, and we got chatting about that. We went on the radio, and normally when I'm on BBC Devon, they'll get me in to talk about something funny.
Yeah.
But on this occasion, we had to talk about that, and I just was very uncomfortable talking about serious things because I'm used to sort of putting in a punchline. So yeah. I don't really. But
is the comedy a mask? I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
But it could possibly be, because I was very young and I sort of became the class clown, yeah. You know, and that kind of
often the way, isn't it?
Comes yeah. from trauma a lot of the time. Yeah. You ask any comedian, there's something going on back there.
there's most a lot of very tortured souls as yeah, comedians, aren't there?
Absolutely. My humour's not dark. I mean, I talk about everyday things.
Yeah.
Middle-aged women problems, and I don't do anything groundbreaking or cutting edge, but I like to make the audience laugh. And a lot of the time people say I'm relatable and people want to be my friend. Maybe it comes from a place of wanting to be liked at some point.
Well, I think most people want to be liked.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's that making up almost, isn't it? I've got to be liked.
Mm.
Yeah. Who are your inspirations? Who would you say, oh, they really inspire me, or I learned a lot from them, or I admire them?
From a young age, Victoria Wood.
Brilliant.
I actually listened to her cassettes. I had cassettes of Victoria Wood, yeah. And I used to listen to them on my little Walkman. And I was too young to understand a lot of the stuff she talked about, but I just found her really funny. I liked her songs. And obviously, as I've grown up, there's a lot more of her material. I think, oh, yeah, that's happening to me now.
But so you understand it more. I understand to it.
Yeah, I related to it more. And I very nearly met her. I was in Edinburgh in 2013 and I was doing a show, and the producers were her agents, and they said okay. She was going to come to the show. And I said, please don't tell me what day she's coming.
No,
please just don't.
You'll be free, yeah.
But unfortunately, it was when she wasn't well and she had a long day, and she sent her apologies and, you know, she went back to her hotel early. But I said, but she knows who I am. And they said, yeah. And I went, that'll do.
That's enough. Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's enough. She was just that she knew who I was.
Goddess of humour, wasn't
absolutely.
She? I'm told she was very generous, so she didn't always want the punchline for herself. So she'd write things, you know, like her sitcoms and things, and other people would get the funniest lines.
Yeah, you only have to watch Dinner Ladies and Acorn Antiques to see how generous, like Caroline Ahern as well.
Yes.
You know, just sharing
she was
the
brilliant, wasn't she? The best question ever asked in ever. You know what I'm going
I know
with
what
this?
You're saying, yeah.
It was Debbie McGee, wasn't it? Who was married to Paul Daniels, and she said, "So, Debbie, what first attracted you to the millionaire Paul Daniels?" And to her credit, she
absolutely
laughed.
Brilliant.
I mean, she was a genius. And she's an overused expression, but a genius. So she was your inspiration. And I know what you mean about sometimes people are just funny, aren't they?
Yeah, she was a tortured soul as well.
Was she?
Yeah, she had a lot of things going on. And towards the end, she did a lot of stuff for charities, but she didn't advertise it. She quietly did a lot of women's talks and things like that for cancer charities and things like that. And I met Craig Cash years ago. He was Dave in Royal Family with her. And he's now doing the voiceover for Gogglebox, which she did. And I met him and I was like, oh.
Well, it's funny. It comes back to the thing about some funny people are funny because they were tortured. So I think of probably, I personally think the funniest person that I've ever seen was Billy Connolly. And I think he could stand there and read the telephone directory and I'd laugh. He's just funny. I mean, there's just something about the guy. He's funny. And the only other person I could think of like that who I never saw was Tommy Cooper, who I told stood up to give an after-dinner speech and everyone laughed because he just looked
just
funny.
Just a facial expression.
And he looked down at his wife and said, I haven't said anything yet.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how funny he was. I mean,
Barry Humphries, I think, had that as well. Just the facial expression or a certain look.
Yeah. Do you think they worked on that or do you just think they were funny?
I'd like to think that being naturally funny is a gift. And there are people I know that really work on a script and they have character acts and they're not like that at all in real life. And if they were to do a show and it got derailed, for instance, they got heckled or something, they couldn't go off their script. But there are also people who are just naturally funny and, like you say, could just read the phone book.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that's where I want to be because I'm sort of an exaggerated version of myself on stage.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a script or I don't really have a character. I just kind of turn my volume up to 11.
Right.
And I come off stage, I'm quite shy in real life. People come up to me and I'm mortified when they...
Right, because they've seen you on stage and they think therefore you'll be all... Gregarious now going, do you get the thing of where, oh, you're funny, you're a comedian, tell me a joke?
Oh, that's all the time, yeah. I never tell taxi drivers what I do.
No,
because they're all, oh, I've got one for you.
Yeah, I've got one for you.
Oh, why aren't you on the telly?
Yeah.
Well, they've not asked me.
Yet. Yeah. So they were your inspirations, I suppose. Is that the style of comedy as well, or just because of who they were and what they did?
Without realising when I was younger, female role models, definitely. Victoria Wood, Dawn French, Jennifer Saunders. Dawn French, my absolute idol, and she's a local woman as well.
Yes, I think she sat in the very chair.
She has actually, yes. I probably will take it home with me. I actually went to her book signing at her show the other week and told her I was a Plymouth comedian because our paths had brushed very quickly years ago. I worked at Madame Tussauds and she was walking through and she was with the PA lady from Madame Tussauds.
Right.
And I quickly bellowed, "All right, my lover," to her. Yeah. And I told her I was a Plymouth comic and she followed me on Instagram.
Brilliant.
So now I've got to try and be better on social media because Dawn French's eyes are there.
Following you, yes.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And also as well, the fact that she's local and in her autobiography, she talks very honestly about her childhood and things. And she lost her dad at a young age as well.
Right.
So these things, they draw me to her as, you know, a role model and just someone brilliant and local. She's the only person I've really got starstruck
with. Well, you can relate to, can't you? I mean, you can completely relate to. I don't want to be negative, but are there comedians you really don't relate to or you don't like or you just think that's just inappropriate?
I don't watch that much comedy because I know there's a lot of it out there now with Netflix. I don't watch that much stand-up specials. I've always liked people like Peter Kay, obviously French and Saunders,
genius.
Victoria Wood. I like Catherine Ryan. I like Tom Ward is one at the moment is I find hilarious. There was a time I was at a festival, a comedy festival at Latitude, and on the big stage there were certain comedians and one of them was like more of a politically satirical, trendy sort of comic.
Yeah.
And I noticed different people were laughing at him. And then afterwards, Alan Carr came on and I thought I was going to wet myself.
Right,
so I found that interesting that I didn't really find the other guy
man.
Funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found more generic, relatable, everyday stories funny.
Yeah.
I grew up watching The Two Ronnies and Kenny Everett and funny sketches, you know, Young Ones.
Silly funny. Well,
silly stuff.
Yeah.
It's famous at the Edinburgh Festival. When you do an Edinburgh Festival show, there's always got to be a narrative arc and there's that famous bit at 45 minute mark, you've got to do something sad. You've got to do something really sad and make people cry and then bring them back at the end. And that's the shows that win the awards. And I never felt comfortable doing that. I just wanted to be funny. I think if you're doing an hour show, you have to do some kind of story, some kind of journey. But I went to see Tim Vine do an hour show and it was absolutely exhausting because it's relentless one-liners.
The person who actually made me laugh so much I had to leave the room was Jethro, actually. Mm-hmm. In his early days, it was 1987, he came to Launceston Police Club and it was packed and I laughed so much I had to leave the room, I couldn't breathe and it was hurting and he was just funny.
Yeah.
Most of his jokes you can't tell even on a podcast.
He had that ability of keeping a straight face, being really funny, but not looking like he was trying to be funny. He was just telling stories. Because sometimes there's people who sort of laugh at their own jokes. And I do it sometimes. Like if the audience make me laugh, I'll just...
Yeah,
but that ability of just keeping a straight face and not looking like you're trying too hard to be funny. Yeah. Jethro had that.
He did. I mean, again, most of his jokes I couldn't tell. But the one I loved, because it's just so silly, but we've all been there, was he said, "I was walking across the moors the other day and I saw my friend on the other side of the valley. I waved at him. He waved at me. We met in the middle and it wasn't either of us." I just thought, that's genius.
Yeah.
We've all been there, haven't we? You think you know someone and you wave at them and you meet up in the middle. I think comedians are geniuses. I think there's something where they can connect, where they really bring something so ordinary and make you realise we've all done it, or make you laugh at yourself, really, aren't you?
Mm.
I could watch comedians all day and all night if I could keep breathing. You're a Jenna through and through, you said.
Absolutely.
And you're the voice of Plymouth Trails app. How did you end up doing that?
Well, it was during the pandemic and it was actually my mum sent me the email because she had it through from Plymouth Council, I think it was, and it was a voiceover. And I never used to like the sound of my voice. I thought, I think I sound 12 years old and like I live on a tractor. But I applied for it. They found out I could actually read and I read it and they were like, yeah, that'll do. Because they wanted a Janner, but not too Janner, I don't think. So I did use my telephone voice.
Not so Janner that people from outside can't understand.
My telephone voice. So I had to
say
things
correctly. You've got a telephone Janner voice.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
So instead, you know, the famous store, House of Fraser, used to be called Dingles.
Yeah.
And as a Janner, we would say Dingoes.
Dingoes,
but I, you know, I had to say Dingles. Dingles.
Okay, you said that.
Dingles.
Do you talk, if your boyfriend has a good goof, and works up Stover, Asders. Because you've got to pluralise everything.
I do say Asders. In fact, when Russell, name drop, Russell Kane came and did his show in Plymouth.
Sorry, yes, just
and
picked that
I'd, up I'd supported him and I said to him, oh, just a bit of local knowledge. We don't say Asda, we say Asders. And then he actually said it in the show and my niece was with me and she nudged me and went, he used your bit.
Because
he went, oh, Asders, and got a big laugh.
The conversation continues shortly, but first, the 60-second charity pitch.
Our charity is Hearts Together and we're based at Derriford in Plymouth. We enable families and their loved ones to stay close together during difficult times in our hospital hotel, providing a home away from home. We offer 26 ensuite rooms, but we provide so much more than just a bed. We provide support, care and compassion when it matters the most. We provide free transport to and from the hospital in our electric shuttle. We also provide free on-site counselling and follow-up service when our guests return home. We provide accommodation to patients, carers, relatives and healthcare professionals who are using any healthcare facility in Plymouth, including University Hospitals Plymouth NHS Trust, the Nuffield and the Hyperbaric Chamber at DDRC. To enable us to provide this vital service for those who need us, we do rely on the kindness, generosity and support from donors and willing volunteers. Last year alone, we were unable to accommodate just over 4,400 nights of excess demand, so we are working really hard to raise funds to expand our hotel and increase our capacity to enable more families to stay with us during their time of need.
Follow the Devon and Plymouth Chamber of Commerce on X at @chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
Yeah, I'm waving the Plymouth flag since I've been back. I've been doing lots of local projects, and one of them being the Plymouth Comedy Tours, which I did with two colleagues.
Yes.
And I actually would teach people how to speak Janner.
And so they've received rave reviews on TripAdvisor.
They absolutely have, yes.
So you walk around doing comedy while you're walking? How does that work?
Absolutely. Well, it was just after the pandemic and there weren't many gigs back and running.
Right.
So two colleagues of mine, we decided to do a walking tour, but with a difference. So there is a bit of history in there, but there's a lot of walking around the shops and pointing out different pasty shops and statistics. For instance, outside the Drake Circus shopping mall, it won the Carbuncle Cup back in 2018.
It did.
For being the ugliest building. And yes, also it is the UK's most shoplifted branch of Pandora. So the facts like that in the tour. We also
They're not aiming high, are they? Pandora.
We give people a bingo card. So everyone's got different bingo cards. So as they're walking around the city centre, they can tick it off when they see certain things. Seagull in the Sundial, that's bound to happen.
Yeah.
Local heckler, we often got heckled. Someone getting arrested, that would happen now and again.
Yeah.
Things like someone drinking cider, certain pasty shops. One of my favourite was a large man walking a tiny dog. So people would have their eyes open for all these things that you might see. Someone in a dry robe, skateboarder falling
dry
over,
ropes.
All these things. Oh. Yeah, I've got a whole bit about dry robes.
Yes, where did they suddenly pop from? I've got a gorilla robe, which is the sort of cheap cousin to a dry robe. I've only worn it a couple of times. But people wear them like around town.
In Asda's, yeah.
Yeah.
I was over at Drake's Island with my dry robe on the other day. I thought it was going to get blown off, if I'm allowed to say that.
You can say whatever you like. It's a podcast. We don't care. So, you're Janner through and through, you were named one of the 50 coolest people in Plymouth.
I actually was. And I'm going to dine out on that forever.
Was it ranked? Was you?
No,
like
it was
number...
in no particular order. So, I've decided I'm number four after Larry Spear, Tom Daly and Don French.
Ah,
I've decided.
That's Stuart Elford. I don't know if I'm allowed to call
Janner you. Are pure Janner through and through?
Well, I came in when I was about eight, so I don't think I'm allowed to be a Janner.
If it was 11:30, how would you pronounce that?
Yeah, I'm not a Janner.
Would you say half Lem? Yeah, if
I
say
wouldn't
half
say
Lem,
half Lem.
You're Janner, no.
Because your tour, 47.
47.
It's about being 47, I guess. Yeah,
so
but it's S-E-M, 47.
47, that's how we say it, yeah.
Huh.
Instead of Devon, it's Dem.
Dem.
Or Devonport. Demport.
Demport.
Yep. Yep.
I used to have a guy I surfed with in the job who used to do a brilliant impression of the sort of people we'd meet down in Union Street. You know, you're a bloody nose, you copper.
Yeah.
I swear it's on my baby's life. You know, it was that sort of thing. I'd say nothing to my solicitor. There was lots of that going on.
The solicitor, yeah.
Solicitor.
Oh, I hear them all the time. And I usually text the boys that I do the tours with. I said, oh, someone in Asda just said they were getting a bago.
A bago?
A bago.
Yeah.
And a lady at the bus stop the other day was moaning about the pedos outside her house.
Pedos.
So many pedos outside my house.
Do you know, it's funny, I walked past Messenger, you know, the statue,
yes,
when it was, the day it opened, and there was a couple of old ladies looking at it, and one of them looked at the other and went, ear, it's too blimmin' big, isn't it? And I just thought, yes, top critique of art there. I mean, we take the mick out of Plymouth, but I kind of like that it's beginning to celebrate its Jannerism instead of being a kind of put down. I mean, you know, Argyle play the Janner song. And the first time I saw that, I think, was on the buses when they had the advert, be a good Janner and look after Nana during the COVID pandemic. Mm. I don't think there's something to be ashamed of. I don't think we should celebrate ignorance, but I think we should celebrate and laugh at ourselves and our diversity.
The comedy tours, we say, we take the mickey out of it out of love. We love the city. Yeah. We want to celebrate the mundane. And we actually had a calendar, the kebab shops of Plymouth. And my colleague went around and took photos of all the kebab shops. He picked 12, obviously. Yeah. And they all signed off on it and said, yeah, we'll do it. That's fine. Yeah. And we had to get them reprinted because they sold out immediately. And people would buy them as secret Santa presents. Kebab shops, oh, Plymouth.
Oh, Plymouth, yeah.
And it sold like hot pasties. It was perfect. And my mum didn't know why it was funny. About the kebab shop calendar, and I said, if you don't know why it's funny, I can't explain it to you. You either get it or you don't.
Okay,
like people buy calendars with ugly car parks on it and things like that.
Roundabouts of the UK, yes.
But the kebab shop calendar was brilliant. We were thinking what to do next, with maybe barber shops of Mutley, that kind of thing.
Well, you'd need 90 odd months in the year,
vape
wouldn't you?
Shops of Western Approach.
Yes. Well, Mutley is very strange. So Mutley Plain does seem to have an inordinate number of barber shops.
Yeah.
There is a rumour that one or two of them might not be actually barber shops.
Oh, we did used to stop at the Fitted Kitchen Centre. Do you know the one?
Yes.
At the top of Union Street. We used to do a little stop there and we'd say it's actually had the same bathroom suite in the window for 45 years.
Was it avocado in colour? So that's an equality avocado suite. I'm going to go back to the start just very briefly before we finish, but two little things I want to draw out here. One is, you're a former Butlins Redcoat?
Yes.
Where, when, how?
1998, Minehead, showing me age, 47. Oh,
well, and you know
again,
that.
It was in the local paper. You know, they were doing this big recruitment drive at Ritzy's.
I used to be a bar manager at Ritzy's.
Did you?
Yeah, upstairs in, was it Snobs upstairs? Yeah, Snobs.
Snobs, Ritzy's, Fiesta, it was
Fiesta
at one
Suite.
Point.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually went to the Ritzy's on the night of the Great Dingo's Fire.
Dingo's Fire,
and
yep.
I told my mum I was staying at my friend's house, so I couldn't tell her I'd seen the fire because I was supposed to be at my friend's house, but right. We'd seen the fire, so I had to keep
you
that to myself.
You rebel, you.
I know. I could have phoned 999, but I thought I can't because I'm pretending to be at my friend Claire's house. And there was a lovely sale afterwards, wasn't there?
There was. And the last thing I wanted to bring out, I've got to ask you about this, and I hope it's not too dodgy, but I understand you have a blow-up Christopher Dean doll.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have him anymore, but I do.
Have you burst him?
There are certain things I could say, but I don't know if they're appropriate. But I took him to Edinburgh, and we had quite a good month in Edinburgh.
To the Fringe.
To the Fringe.
Yeah.
I did a show called Dancing on Thin Ice, which was all about my love of Torvald and Dean. And at that point, it was going to be Torvald and Dean were retiring. I mean, they've retired a lot of times and they're actually retiring next year.
Right.
But it was all about my quest to become just famous enough to go on Dancing on Ice because I love Torvald and Dean. And people used to be, oh, so you ice skate? And I'm like, nope, don't ice skate. I'm terrible, but I love Torvald and Dean.
So you do it.
And I did a whole show because I met them when I was 8.
Did you?
Yes. And I used to record them on VHS, every competition they did. I knew all the commentary, I knew all the dances, all the routines.
And can you do the bolero dance?
Well, I have done the bolero dance in various places around the world, actually, because, you know, the throwing themselves to the floor, that actually symbolises them throwing themselves into a volcano.
I understand, yes.
And I was in Italy and I went up Mount Vesuvius and I had to do it at the top of Vesuvius. I laid in the bolero pose. And in Nottingham, there's an estate that's named after Torvald and Dean. And I went there in my bolero costume and laid underneath the bolero close sign. In the bolero, curtains were twitching, but I'm sure they're used to it. And I had my photos taken because why not? And in my show, 47, don't you just love it when things come back in the news and you can resurrect your material?
Yeah.
Because Torvald and Dean have actually announced their last ever retirement show next year. And I've done this whole show about my childhood and leading up to today and how I love Torvald and Dean. And in my show, Dancing on Thin Ice, I did a finale where myself and a blow-up Christopher Dean came on and did the bolero. And now I've got my own Christopher Dean because my lovely fiancé is going to be Christopher Dean and he's got the top, he puts it on and comes on stage in the purple.
Outfit.
Yeah, my mum made it.
Lovely. So he is the Christopher Dean to your Jane Torvald.
Yes, he is, yes. But spoiler alert, our knees can't quite take the beginning when they're on their knees. We're like, oh, we're a bit old for that. So I had to think of another finale.
Is that one of those where you can get down but you wouldn't get back
up
again?
Yeah, exactly.
Sadly, it's...
The thought is there, but we don't quite make it. But I have actually got ringside seats for next year in Wembley to see them.
Fantastic. Are you going to wear the outfit?
Well, the thing is, I have met Jane and Chris since the 8-year-old experience. And I've got a photo of me with Jane Torvald because I'm in the audience of Dancing on Ice. I've made a banner with lots of pictures of Jane and Chris. And also on the banner is the picture of me meeting them when I was 8. And I'm wearing my Torvald and Dean 1984 scarf. And in the picture with Jane Torvald, I look a bit crazed and she's smiling and it looks like she needs a restraining order against
me. I was going to say, has the injunction worn off now?
Yeah, this picture has made it into my show. And when I did my show in Edinburgh, Christopher Dean slid into my DMs because there was an ex Dancing on Ice producer was in the audience. And I was like, oh my God.
You're down the street with the kids there, sorry. You said slid into your DMs and I'm thinking of Doc Martens.
Yeah.
But it's a different thing. Direct messages.
That's it.
Sorry, you were saying, go on.
But so Christopher Dean told me that there was a Dancing on Ice producer in the audience. But it turned out they were an ex Dancing on Ice producer, so they couldn't get me in.
Well, hope springs eternal. So where can people see your tour, 47?
Well, it was meant to be just a one-off show in Plymouth, and that sold out very quickly. So I'm doing it again very soon, and I'm also doing it at the Somerset Comedy Festival in Taunton in, I want to say, July. I need to look at my diary for these things.
Where can people find out?
Are you on socials and stuff? Formerly Twitter.
I still call it X.
I can't be doing it. I don't like change. They can find me on X.
And what's your...
At Funny Susie B.
X handle. Funny Susie B.
Funny Susie B. Or on Instagram at Susie B Comedy. I'm terrible at social media, but now Dawn French follows me. I'm going to try and be more visible.
You need to do it.
I'm very old school. I am not on TikTok. I can't cope.
I did it for a few days just to see what it was all about and came off because I just thought, I know what's going to happen. My team are going to secretly film me doing a dad dance or something and that'll be posted all over the world for people to see. Anyway, look, sadly, we have run out of time, which is such a crime. I'm really grateful you've made people laugh and you've celebrated Plymouth and everything that is good and Janna about the city.
Can I just say one more thing?
Of course
just
you can.
Like Columbo, just one more thing. I am doing my 47 Taunton and Falmouth and maybe Plymouth again, but very exciting this year. I'm doing a show with the Barbican Theatre.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to be doing a Christmas show. And it's going to be a Pantol-style experience, possibly called Ciderella.
Ciderella?
Yes. And being the only female in the cast, I might be playing Ciderella and I might be playing Letitia Dean playing Ciderella because I once was in an EastEnders lockdown episode as Sharon from EastEnders and we decided I might be doing that. So
I can see it.
Keep your eyes posted for Barbican Theatre Christmas show.
And is it in the spirit of comedy going to actually be at Christmas or are you going to do it in July or something?
No, it's in December. It's going to be December. Okay. We're in talks about it at the moment. We've assembled the cast. We've got the artistic director on board. So we're doing some kind of Plymouth-based panto because my big ambition in life is to be in the Theatre Royal panto. That is my bucket list thing that I want to do.
Well, so James Mackenzie Blackman has been on this show. So hopefully he'll listen. James, we've got a top star for you. See what we can be doing.
Well, I am the Janna Diana.
The Janna Diana.
That's what they call me. Dawn French is the Queen of Plymouth. I'm the Janna Diana. So I'm the lady in waiting.
Yes. Princess of Plymouth. Susie, thank you so much for joining us and good luck with the show.
Thank you.
And keep us posted. Let us know and people can follow you on social media and hopefully you'll be sold out around the world.
Oh yeah, the world tour of the Southwest continues.
Wonderful. Susie, thank you very much.
Cheers and gone.
Ciao.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. With 16 offices across the Southwest, Westcott's are always on hand to give clear, calm and expert advice. Westcott's, we're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Presented by Stuart Elford. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon and Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.